Welcome back, y'all. Zone Scheme Podcast. Thanks again, boys, for checking in. This is Kyrie Demos checking in with Evan Majewski and Nick Kramer. Boys, glad to be back.
Yeah, for sure. Glad to have another episode here, another opportunity to talk some ball. Obviously, draft season, free agency coming up, a lot of things obviously flying around the news, so can't wait to get into it here.
For sure.
Yep, I have the same sentiment. The dust has kind of settled from the season, so now this is kind of the really fun part of the season for in my opinion, building the roster through the draft, free agency, and especially with some of the moves that have already been made that we're going to get into. This is going to be topsy-turvy type of offseason, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, same here, man. And, you know, it's crazy, like, you talk about, you know, roster building and this time of the offseason. This time we really get to see through the eyes of a GM and how to put a team together and, you know, what type of team needs and scheme fits and, you know, player salaries, things of that nature. So I think it's so cool that, you know, now that everybody really has access to everything and knows, okay, I know this guy's going to be a free agent. There's these guys coming up in the draft. You know, everybody has an idea of, you know, of what or how to build a team. So just talking about that a little bit, building teams. We saw a playoff team make a play for a quarterback just last week with the Indianapolis Colts trading for Carson Wentz. And, you know, it's a move that we all anticipated. And this was always the place that we had linked Carson Wentz to, just his history with Frank Reich, you know, his best season as a pro in 2017 coming under Frank Reich in Philadelphia. So just thoughts on the move. We'll kick things with you first, Juice. Just thoughts on the move and how it works out for both sides.
Yeah, I really, obviously, like you said, it was an anticipated move that happened here. Obviously, a great pairing. I'm really interested to see what Wentz can do to his personal, you know, kind of situation to only get better. I mean, if you look at kind of his career so far, he had that peak. And then since then, he's really had some rough times out there. You look at his game film-wise, mechanically, he's kind of broken down to what he once was mentally, decision-making he has. So I think it's a matter of first trying to see if he can, you know, kind of rein in that confidence once again and start building forward. Hopefully Frank Reich's the guy that can do that. I think he's always been a player's coach, and you hear that time and time again. I think he's somebody that will boost your confidence as a player. Just try to build around you and what you can do best rather than trying to implement something that maybe wouldn't work. And maybe that's what worked out, ended up happening in Philadelphia with Wentz, maybe trying to mold some things. Obviously not giving him any help there, but if you look at how Indy's been building their team, they are only getting better. I think they had a very impressive showing this past season and only lost by a field goal, you know, right at the end of the game there with the Buffalo Bills, who went on to the AFC Championship game. So I think there's room for growth, and this is going to be a young, scary team, I think, moving forward in the AFC for all the contenders.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll look at it from the Eagles' perspective, and this should have been done a long time ago, but I think this trade should have solidified this. Howie Roseman, their GM, should be fired for this trade. I mean, the Colts got a good player in Carson Wentz, but the Eagles ruined him. Drafting Jalen Hurts, they absolutely shattered his confidence, didn't put anything really around him in terms of a wide receiver that could help Carson Wentz. So, and the compensation they got for him in return is kind of laughable. Yeah, you get a first-round pick potentially next year, but why couldn't you get a first-rounder for this year? You're right. Not getting any immediate return for Carson Wentz. You're getting a third-rounder in this draft. So for a roster that has a lot of holes, especially at the receiver position, offensive line has continually been decimated. Zach Ertz wants out. I mean, you have Dallas Goedert. Your running game is okay with Miles Sanders, but a lot of holes on defense. You could have really used that first-round pick this year. And they show they could get one, but why couldn't you get one for this year's draft? So Howie Roseman has absolutely destroyed the Eagles franchise. And this was the coup de grace. He should have been fired after this move. But, you know, it is what it is. The Eagles, they got two picks. Carson Wentz is kind of outworn his welcome. I mean, it's not all his fault. I'll say that to my grave, that I think the Eagles deserve a lot of the blame for what happened to Carson Wentz in the end.
For sure.
But it was a mutual ending. He needed to move on. And people forget, 3 years ago, Carson Wentz was going to be the MVP until he tore his ACL against the Rams.
Right.
And then he single-handedly led a terrible Eagles team to the playoffs last year. And then they go and draft Jalen Hurts. Yeah, it's okay to draft an experimental quarterback, but they drafted one of the more polished quarterbacks in the draft who could have started on an NFL roster right away. So, I don't know. A lot of things the Eagles did confused me. They fired Doug Peterson, and Howie Roseman should have been fired with him because just gross incompetence when it comes to running the organization. I'm glad for Carson Wentz that he's out of there. He's going to get a fresh start with a good team in Indy under his former mentor, Frank Reich. So I like the move for Indy, for Philly. I don't even know. It's just Howie Roseman should have been sacked for this, in my opinion.
For sure. Yeah. I was going to dive into the Indy side, but you know, just going off your points, man, with Philly, Philly, just like you said, just they've been, ever since they won the Super Bowl, they've really been a very questionable organization, to say the least. I think the fact that, well, you know, it's tough to keep a guy like Frank Reich around after the type of success he had under Doug Peterson, but clearly the offense was never the same once he left. And I think that really goes into the regression that Carson Wentz had, and, you know, just everything around him regressed too. The offensive line fell apart. Defense was a shell of itself compared to what it was in 2017. And, you know, we talked about the receivers. You know, Greg Ward was playing receiver. I mean, a former college quarterback, Travis Fulgham, a guy pulled up from practice squad and things like that. So, you know, Alshon Jeffrey has been nowhere to be seen since 2018. And, you know, he's definitely going to be on the outs this offseason. So, you know, it's just been a mess around Carson Wentz. And, you know, just going off that point too, Jalen Hurts. And, you know, I think at this point, you have to go all in on Jalen Hurts. I mean, you clearly at this point, you trade away your franchise quarterback, you fire your head coach, you bring in Jalen Hurts' old quarterback's coach as well. I mean, it's time to fully commit to him. No more of this wishy-washy stuff. You know, they've had Wentz on pins and needles, whether it was with Foles or Hurts last year. I think it's just time to move forward. And you know, really just embrace this rebuild, because that's really where they're at this point. They've got to build that both of those lines back up. Clearly, they need to still get some more weapons for Hurts. And you know, like we talked about with you talked about with Zach Ertz being gone, but just thinking about it from Indy's perspective, you know, I'm a big proponent of situations, and I really think the situation that Wentz is going to be in is just far better. You know, he's got a top five at the bare minimum offensive line there in Indy. Now, you know, solid receiving core, can still make some improvements to it. But, I mean, hey, they still got some decent weapons with Pittman. Paris Campbell hopefully will come back healthy, maybe re-sign T.Y. Hilton for a friendly deal, and a bunch of tight ends. And we know those running backs are solid with Taylor and Hines as well. So the defense too, very solid defense. But, you know, just I think the connection he has with Frank Reich. You know, he led the league in QBR in 2017 that year before he tore his ACL. And I really think that just the creativity that Frank Reich has in his offense with a physical prototype like Carson Wentz, if he can take the thinking out for Carson, you know, just get back to some of those RPO and, you know, leaner schemes for him, I think that he can refine that success. Because it's not too long ago that, you know, this guy – had 4,000 yards passing, 27 touchdowns and 7 picks with a bottom 5 receiving core, still got them to the playoffs. And we know the NFC East is weak, but you know, I think that's saying something to be able to do that.
Yeah. I like what some of the weapons they put around Philip Rivers and even Brissett the year before, but building through the draft, it's going to be interesting to see where T.Y. Hilton goes. I'm not sure if he will resign. I think he is searching for a little bit of money. So it's willing, you know, whether Indy is willing to do that or not, but I think through Pittman and Paris Campbell, hopefully coming back healthy, I think you got two guys that can, at least you can build from. They certainly should add more because they're a little thin at say the tight end position. Jack Doyle's been around for a while. He's kind of more of that number two guy. You have Mo Alie-Cox, who has a little bit of upside yet. But like you said, it starts with that O-line, that running game. Hopefully Wentz is just put into a much, much better situation. And I did want to mention something when you were talking on Hurts. Pray to God that this guy doesn't go out there this year and kind of lose all his confidence, just as, you know, Wentz did. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they can at least give him something as far as a little glimmer of hope, maybe this offseason or this draft, where they can commit to his game a little bit more and put him in a better situation, or else he's going to be running for his life, just as Wentz has the last 2 years, and it's not going to end well. So I think if you look, going jumping back to Indy, same thing there. If they can just add a couple more pieces through this draft, through this free agency, I think Wentz is going to be hopefully playing at that level that you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just before we move on, just hearing different interviews and things like that from Eagles players, I think that's one thing that makes Hurts a better guy for to be their quarterback in terms of in a rebuild, because he doesn't seem to have that lack of confidence at times, or where Wentz almost had things, you know, some of those external factors were affecting Wentz a little bit more so than, you know, the average quarterback. So, you know, hopefully, you know, they can get the rebuild going right just with Hurts. So, you know, moving forward, we've got, you know, another hot button free agent topic. You know, where's J.J. Watt going? You know, three-time defensive player of the year, you know, I think five-time Pro Bowler as well. J.J. Watt is, you know, again, we talk about walking Hall of Famers. He definitely fits the bill there. You know, and you very rarely see a player of his stature hit the market. But I think it was really the perfect storm of everything, you know, with the state of the debacle in Houston right now and the fact that he was commanding a $17 million contract for this coming season. You know, to be able to cut ties and save some money, I think it was good for Houston's end. But also, too, a guy like J.J. Watt really deserves to be able to pick what team he gets to play for. You know, truly an NFL legend, and I'm excited to see. So, you know, I think there's a handful of teams that could be making a play for him, and a lot of different, you know, we could see him go the big money route. You know, we saw reports saying that he could command anywhere from 15 to 16 million a year, but I'm sure he's thinking of, hey, maybe I could take less money to go to a championship level team and be a playoff contender. So, Crame, I'll kick things to you first. What's a squad that you would like to see him go to? And I know you're a Steelers guy. I know his brother plays for your favorite team. So we're just going to put that out there on the table too, by the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, instantly because JJ's brother, TJ, and Derek, who plays fullback for the Steelers, they both play in Pittsburgh. The connection was there instantly, but it's not going to happen. I'm just going to say that for the Steelers fans out there. We're not going to sign J.J. Watt. One, we don't have the money. And two, they don't need J.J. Watt. I mean, the Steelers defensive line playing a 3-4 scheme, they have Tyson Alualu, who was a PFF top 5 rated interior defensive lineman this past year. Mm-hmm. They have Stephon Tuitt, who had 11 sacks and is coming off by far the best year of his career. And you have Cam Hayward, who's been a first-team All-Pro two of the last 3 years. So they don't need J.J. Watt. I mean, if he wanted to come for an extremely friendly deal, yeah. But, I mean, the Steelers have a lot of needs otherwhere. So, wow, I love J.J. Watt. He's one of my favorite players in the league. It's not going to happen. I think he's ultimately going to end up in Green Bay. And I think it makes a lot of sense for Green Bay to sign a guy like him. Mm-hmm. We talk every year about how Aaron Rodgers isn't the problem in the NFC Championship games. It's always the Packers defense letting them down.
Yeah.
Well, here's a guy who's born and bred in Wisconsin, who grew up a Packers fan. You guys are on the cusp of a title. I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't sign a guy like J.J. Watt. And it fits the bill of them being a championship team, because I don't think J.J. is going to want to go to a terrible organization, especially coming from Houston. And he's earned the right to play for a title, in my opinion. But there's reports out there, the Bills, the Bears, Packers, I think ultimately will end up on the Packers, but honestly, I don't know. I don't really know where it'll end up, and it's going to be interesting to see. I know there's people on Twitter with all these conspiracy theories looking really into J.J. Watt's tweets, how where he may go, but ultimately I don't know. I don't know. And it's very fun to see where there's no real crystal ball where it's see where he's going to end up. But I think it's going to be the Packers. If I were to bet money on it, it'd be the Packers.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, Kareem, I think I'm with you with the point that, you know, he could go to one of these teams and demand top dollar and be that, you know, pass rushing threat that maybe they would expect him to a team like the Jaguars or the Jets, somebody with, you know, all this cap room who could bring a guy like that in no problem as far as the numbers. But I think there are a handful of teams that he would kind of come in and be maybe that second, you know, best lineman. He's not asked to be that guy anymore, where he is going to really make that maybe give a team that next step as far as a young up-and-coming team. A couple of teams that come to mind, maybe the Cleveland Browns. I know, obviously, as a Bills fan, kind of a similar situation, two teams that are, you know, have young quarterbacks that haven't seen success for a long time that are starting to see that success and just kind of need that next little hump to get over things. I think another team that might make sense, they have a little cap space to work with, is the Baltimore Ravens. I think he could add to that front seven and be a presence there and not, again, be that top guy that they, you know, once expected to. But I'm with you, Kareem, coming from a situation like the Houston Texans, I think he's going to avoid something like that. Another team to mention that has some space, the Miami Dolphins, right, that are just there in that playoff kind of cusp that need that hump, that veteran presence. But I think that is his kind of ultimate value. He's probably not going to reach double digits, you know, too often. Again, maybe he will. Maybe I'm very wrong about that. But I think that, you know, locker room presence that he brings, the experience, the all that aspect as far as that team culture and kind of taking that next step, I think that's where his value's at right now.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing with J.J. Watt right now is, of course, you know, the player that he is and, you know, still maintains to be, he clearly is not the guy that was leading the league in sacks anymore. But at the same time, the value he brings, I think versatility-wise, being able to play inside and outside, you know, just the fact, you know, like you said, as a locker room presence, I think that even stands out most for him right now. We obviously know what he was able to do down in Houston, you know, winning Man of the Year a few years back as well. So I think a guy like him really just brings some, you know, his presence alone is the type of figure you want in your locker room. So, you know, I think that's why you see a lot of our buddies here in Buffalo, you know, as Bills fans, really rooting for him to come here because, you know, we really don't have that type of player in our front seven. You know, obviously Jerry Hughes is a veteran, but J.J. Watt clearly, I think, as a player, one, but also as a leader, brings that much more than Jerry Hughes does. And, you know, just thinking about, you know, what the Bills lacked, you know, for most of the 2020 season, though, it was the ability to, one, get to the quarterback, and two, stop the run, you know, and I think J.J. Watt can help in both of those areas. But, you know, I like the, you know, the connection with the Packers, Kareem. I really think that, and if I had to bet too, I think that'd be the place he'd end up. But I think another spot that's been interesting is hearing about Tennessee, just for the fact that, you know, I think one, the in-division thing is intriguing. I always think guys that leave one team and stay in division always take it personally, you know, playing against their old squad twice in the year, but also too the fact that Vrabel's there. Mike Vrabel was his their defensive coordinator at one point in Houston, but I know at least their defensive line coach throughout J.J. Watt's tenure. So, you know, they have that connection there, and they kind of need him. That was really the biggest struggle for the Titans last year, was just the fact they defensively, whether it was in the passing game or the running game, they really were ineffective overall. I think he could be beneficial for a guy like Jeffrey Simmons too, you know, who's still a very young player, but, you know, has a ton of talent and, you know, could really become a player in this league. So, you know, moving on again, you know, this is just crazy to think all these big, huge names, you know, we obviously have talked about the quarterbacks that have been on the move. Some that could be on the move or talking about their displeasures. You know, one that, again, we talked about it last time, but before we dive into some draft stuff, you know, just thoughts on this Russell Wilson situation now. You know, the fact that, you know, we have a future Hall of Famer who, I mean, from the outside looking in, things have seemed great out in Seattle. You know, their relationship, the way the franchise has treated him, you know, what he's done for the franchise, it speaks for itself, but it just seems like he's dropping little nuggets here and there that are a little too cryptic. You know, the fact that his agent came out this week and said, hey, he hasn't requested a trade, But if he were to be, just so you guys know, you know, Chicago, Las Vegas, Dallas, and New Orleans were listed as his top four options. So, Crane, we'll start with you first on this. Just thoughts on, you know, what you feel Russ is trying to get out of this situation, and what do you think he could potentially end up doing with this situation?
Well, firstly, if I was a GM, I would always say that everybody has a price. Every player is on the board to be traded if given the right price. But I don't know what Seattle's doing. Like, why are we even letting it get out there that Russell Wilson's on the market? That being said, we talked last time about how the Seahawks have never really built an offensive line around him. And I think Russ is getting sick of staring up at the sky and running for his life. So while I don't personally think he really will ever ask for a trade, barring Seattle just totally going down the tubes, I think he's trying to get his point across, like, hey, listen, like, I'm not just some piece of meat back here. Like, you got to protect me. You got to give me something to work with. And, you know, if you're not going to do that, I'm not going to be risking my life out there, you know, just getting hit every time. So do something about it. So I think it's more of a scare tactic on Russ's part. But I don't see him really going anywhere, because, you know, Seattle should be sent. They're close to Canada. If they trade Russell Wilson, then they should just move across the border and play in the CFL. If you trade Russell Wilson, who's probably at least a top three quarterback in our league right now,
yeah,
and a walking Hall of Famer. So you can't get rid of him unless it's for like five first round picks and a franchise quarterback. But the whole situation, I mean, this is silly season in the NFL. There's people blowing smoke with the draft with players. People are blowing smoke now with Russell Wilson. But, I mean, while he has honest gripes, I don't think he's going to request a trade. And I think he's still in a good situation. Seattle, they're a perennial playoff contender. And they're always right there. They just need a little bit. They just need some finer pieces, like on the offensive and defensive line. And then I think they'll be okay. So, hold your horses, Seattle fans. Don't burn your Russell Wilson jerseys yet. I think he's staying there for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this kind of speaks to a bigger problem that we've been kind of touching on, I think, along the way, especially with guys like Watson up for trade contention, which is absolutely crazy. But I think what are these teams willing to do to keep guys like this? There's five guys, you know, maybe on this planet who you have to let those guys be the face of your franchise, almost the decision makers. You know, you got a guy like Pete Carroll, not to say that, you know, I'm not sure too much about his and Russ's relationship and how it maybe has been as of recently as compared to what it was. But here you have a 70-something-year-old coach who clearly hasn't shown the ability to adapt to his players as of recently. And there has been some situations of that. I mean, this past year, you saw the offense started out strong and just lingered out. And all the players were talking about how they were figured out. And they, I'm sure, were making or thinking at least some suggestions on how to move forward, and you didn't see those things being built into the game plan whatsoever. So, you know, to what extent are these franchises going to protect the things really that don't matter as much as, say, a guy like Russell Wilson? I mean, are you going to keep Pete Carroll and that staff for the sake of keeping them and trading a guy like Russell Wilson? Or are you going to go about it, you know, I think the smarter way, in saying, you know, Russ, you have 8 years left in your career, 8 to 10 years. You know, if you're willing here, you're a top, you know, three player in the league, and you have been for a long time. You know, what do you want? What kinds of things do you want to see, you know, on your offensive line? Looking at this list, this starting offensive line right here, there's holes, and there's been holes here forever. He's seen the same thing, getting, you know, chasing around, you know, making all these crazy plays, doing it all himself. Obviously, he's always been the guy to make those plays outside of structure, and that's what he's had to do consistently. Nothing has been easy for him inside of structure, and I think that's all he wants to see, and I think he is making that clear. So Reed, when you mentioned, you know, what is his tactic, I think he wants a little more say in what happens. And it's interesting how, you know, what are these franchises going to do to keep guys like that happy? Or, you know, what are they going to let stay the same old and potentially lose out on that. Because you look at Houston, that's exactly what's happening. They wanted to keep some things together. Ultimately, they lose probably the most valuable player in the National Football League, aside from Patrick Mahomes. So there you have it. I mean, what are these franchises going to do to maybe put those guys in the driver's seat a little more?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because, you know, you talk about the situation with Watson, Russ's situation. I mean, even Aaron Rodgers, you know, 2020 league MVP, you know, winning his third league MVP. And it, you still can say that, hey, Green Bay hasn't done enough to put pieces around Aaron, you know, just with the fact that, you know, this is a guy that has one Super Bowl appearance and the defense is constantly failing them. And, you know, just the fact that you draft a guy to replace him, one in the first round, but then also in the second round, you move up to draft that guy to replace him eventually, potentially. But then also, too, you take a third string running back in the second round. So it's like, you know, just the it seems like these organizations are getting in their own ways. And, you know, yeah, it would be nice to see if some of these quarterbacks had, I don't even necessarily want to say the power that Houston was offering or said they would give Deshaun Watson. I think even just working in lockstep with them, like, hey, here's what we're thinking. What are you thinking on this? You know, it's a little give and take, a little back and forth, because I think that's the only way, especially in today's NFL, that you're going to get things done. But yeah, I think with Russ, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, even from a business perspective, as an owner, who's bringing in the money for your franchise, Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll? I mean, it's a very simple, simple business aspect, and football wise, I think it's a no brainer.
Yeah. And even just, you talked about his relationship with Pete Carroll. I think that really comes down to that. Like, I think they do have a good relationship, but think about it. Pete Carroll is an old school defensive minded coach who lets his OCs handle business, and they've clearly just failed to get any competent OC up in Seattle. So I think that's really just held Russ back. And we've talked about it for years. Just, you know, hopefully at this point moving forward, they can do something to appease him, because you can't even entertain, you know, letting a guy like that go in the prime of his career. So, you know, before we, you know, we're going to move on now to, you know, we've obviously dived deep into the NFL stuff, but, you know, some of the guys coming into the NFL this year, we want to start taking a look at with the draft. We still have about 2 months until the draft, the end of April. And, you know, we're really just getting into the, you know, really just starting to dive into the prospects and, you know, some of the names. And this is probably going to be one of the most unique draft processes of all time. I know last year's was unique because of the pandemic, but this year has been even more so affected just because the opt-outs from the 2020 season, no combine this year, everything just about virtual, you know. So it's really going to be a crapshoot with some of the prospects, because we don't know if, you know, we haven't seen some of these guys since 2019, things of that nature. So you know, what are some names, or who are some names that you guys are really starting to dive into, or specific position groups that you want to focus on? We'll start things off with you first, Juice.
Yeah, man. I think when you're looking at the top of this class, I think the most loaded group clearly is this wide receiver group. I mean, you start with Jalen Waddle and Ja'Marr Chase. It's hard to maybe pick out, you know, who's your wide receiver one. And they bring a little different skill set to the table. But obviously, you have a Heisman winner that is right there in the conversation, and Devonta Smith. I know his body size is a little weird compared to some historic prospects. You haven't seen too many guys that are over 6 foot and under 180 pounds. But he's one of those guys. And I think he's answered some questions on his film, especially this past year. Obviously, being a Heisman winner, you're going to put some things on tape. But obviously, with that size, I think you have some questions about his physicality and things like beating press, and how does he match up with maybe some of these lengthier receivers. And I think on tape, he's proven that he's got the skill set to, you know, stick up with those guys in the NFL and beat some of those more physical corners that you'll see. But I think when you look at a guy like Jaden Waddle's game, obviously from the same team, Alabama, they've been stacked. I mean, they've been on the roster for a few years, and it's like they've been their fourth option at times. And then here they are all of a sudden breaking out into superstars. So Waddle's an interesting prospect a little more of a downfield player. I think maybe has the edge as an NFL prospect over his teammate Devonta Smith, because he can do maybe a little bit more all around the field and has maybe a little more physicality to his game. But you can't forget about a guy like Ja'Marr Chase. He's right there in the conversation. So I think we could see potentially three receivers along with a tight end, right, going in the top 15. And I think that highlights the first round.
We end with the Chiefs at 32. Yeah, Ryan, it's a
very unique situation. Hold on, we've got an ad going, y'all. But I think one of the most unique things about this year's draft is the fact that, you know, we do have three legitimate, you know, first-round pick talents at the receiver position. I mean, I think even potentially four, if you had Tony from Florida in there. But, you know, I think the cool thing about you know, these three prospects, they are so different. I think Ja'Marr Chase, from a physical perspective, from his game perspective, I think he's a true number one receiver. And I think that he's a guy that, you know, with any team, any scheme, any quarterback, I think he could come in and be successful with. I think he's a guy that, you know, it sucks that, you know, he's coming off a season where he didn't play when he did opt out. But at the same time, too, he put arguably one of the greatest receiver seasons ever on tape in 2019 with Joe Burrow. And this was opposite of, you know, Justin Jefferson. And you also have a Terrace Marshall who's going to be drafted in the top three rounds this year as well. So, you know, I think he's a guy that, you know, easily is going to be a top 10 pick. But then, you know, you talk about the Waddle and Devontae Smith, you know, that combination as well. I think Waddle, personally, he's a guy that I've always liked more so than a true outside receiver, where, you know, he's more of a weapon type. You know, you can use him in the jet sweep game. You can use him underneath, but at the same time, he has game breaking speed as well. A guy that, you know, you really just get him the ball in space and let him work. So I think, you know, his game really translates well. Hopefully he's let himself heal from that ankle injury that he suffered from and tried to come back too early from in the national title game, you know, so we know he's a tough SOB and has a lot of heart, but I think that, you know, for him, I think he's got a great future once he gets healthy. And then Devontae Smith, we talked about him. And I think his speed alone is definitely game-breaking. But, you know, the fact that he is a pretty developed player, though, you know, he's pretty polished. He's got phenomenal hands, great route runner as well. I know his physical profile isn't the greatest, but at the same time, too, I think that, you know, just relegates him to being, hey, you know, you can move him around, you can play him in the slot. You know, you don't always have to be so static with him. You know, today's NFL isn't about that anyways. You know, you're not seeing guys line up in all the same positions anymore. So I think moving forward, you're going to see a guy like him. Alrighty, guys, before we move on, just wanted to kick things back to Juice real quick. He had another comment to add about the wideouts.
Yeah, I think you just look at the elite talent that's there in the top of the round, top of the class, really. In the top 15 situation, I don't think there's too many teams that are, you know, satisfied with their wide receiver groups. Maybe you consider Atlanta, depending on what they do with Julio. You have Carolina and Denver who have invested a little bit already, and maybe Dallas. Outside of those couple teams, I think all those teams in the top 15 are in play to really add a big-time receiver like one of those guys.
No doubt. And you can never forget about a guy like Kyle Pitts, who essentially is a wide receiver with the type of numbers he put up last year. Can play inside and outside the slot, in line, whatever you need. So converted wideout, actually. So for you, Crane, what's the position group that you're going to be focusing on early on?
Well, I'm going to go a different route. I'm going to go look at the big uglies on the offensive line. And there are some good ones this year. And we've seen in recent years past how important the offensive line is. It's not a sexy position to draft, but it's probably the most important position to draft other than quarterback, obviously. Cause you having five good guys up front who can block opens up a world of things for your quarterback and your run game. So we'll start at Penei Sewell is probably the best offensive line prospect I've seen other than Quentin Nelson. I mean, do yourself a favor and just watch 5 minutes of his highlights. The guy is an absolute monster. He absolutely blows guys off the ball. His athleticism is off the charts. I mean, incredible. Just you want to get motivated, just watch his highlights. Guy's incredible. He's going to be a top five pick, no doubt. He may even be in play for number two with the Jets. And then after that, there's a lot of debate, in my opinion, of who's the second offensive lineman, offensive tackle. It's going to be between, in my opinion, Rashawn Slater and Christian Darrisaw of Virginia Tech and Slater out of Northwestern. But so we're gonna have a lot of time to debate that to the moon before the draft comes out. But ultimately, at the end of the day, don't be surprised if there's maybe six or seven offensive linemen potentially taken in the first round, I think.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of guys that with high upside, with like Aleha Vera Tucker, the swingman from USC who played guard his first 3 years and then was an all Pac-12 player at tackles last year. Jalen Mayfield out of Michigan's got a lot of upside. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just going to – the last one I want to talk about is Liam Eichenberg out of Notre Dame.
Okay.
Given Notre Dame's recent history of producing NFL-caliber offensive linemen, mm-hmm. Quentin Nelson, Ronnie Stanley, Mike McGlinchey in San Francisco. So there's a lot of great offensive line prospects, especially at the tackle position, that can go in the first round, because I think you see a recent trend of teams arming up not only at receiver but also at offensive line, because quarterbacks are worth way too much money nowadays for you to not want to protect them effectively. So that's the position I wanted to look at. I know it's not a glitz and glamour position, but it's an important position to look at in terms of building a franchise. So just watch out on the first day. Watch out for maybe six or seven offensive linemen going in the first round.
Can't win if you can't block. Quarterbacks can't throw if you can't block. You know, I think it's important to be able to build that offensive line. I haven't been an offensive lineman, obviously. I'm always going to stand on that. But, yeah, I think the O-line group is really intriguing to me. You know, Penei Sewell is a phenomenal prospect. The scariest thing about him is he hasn't even scratched the surface of what he can be. And, you know, he's, again, another opt-out guy, phenomenal talent. But, you know, we didn't get to see what he could have improved upon for the 2020 season. But then also, too, you know, a guy like Rashawn Slater, I think he's super pro-ready. You know, he doesn't have the physical measurables that Penei Sewell does, but, you know, 6'3", 305, 310 in that range and can move. I mean, all you got to do is watch the tape he had against Chase Young, man. This guy was just absolutely locked down. You know, and then, you know, you talk about a guy like Darrisaw, who I think he's another guy. Darrisaw and Jalen Mayfield, I think those are two guys who their talent levels have really just improved throughout their time in school. And Darrisaw, I think, is a guy who might be more of a zone scheme type of fit. But then you also have a guy like Mayfield, who I think could play a little bit more of a traditional pro-style offense, you know, especially with Michigan, having played at Michigan. And he played some right tackle there as well. So, you know, I think there's a few different names. I'm interested to see what happens with, like, guys like Elijah Vera Tucker and Alex Leatherwood, who are two guys who have played inside and outside. You know, where do they project more so once they get to the league? I think for both, I honestly personally would rather see both playing in the box or inside at guard. But, you know, we'll never know. We'll see how that process plays out for the both of them. The one group that I was looking into a little bit just early on, because I've gone around and checked in with a few different prospects, but, you know, I tried to watch the cornerbacks this week, and, you know, two guys that really stood out were Patrick Surtain and Caleb Farley. And I think you know, especially with, you know, I think they're two different types of corners. You know, I think Surtain, you know, obviously his NFL bloodlines with his dad playing for the Dolphins and some other squads, you know, I think Kansas City as well, but yeah, he's more of your Richard Sherman, lengthier zone type of guy. You know, I think he'd be great playing off of, you know, on the outside, you know, opposite of another, like a number one corner. You know, I think he could really dominate in number two matchups. But then you also have a guy like Caleb Farley, who from a physical perspective, I think he checks every box. He's just as lengthy and size-wise has the you know, he's, I would say, similar strength-wise to Patrick Surtain, but, you know, he's got even more physical gifts. Again, another opt-out guy, you know, so that's throwing a monkey's wrench into this all. But, you know, I think two names that we're going to be having debates about throughout the process. And then another name to note is J.C. Horn from South Carolina. Definitely want to take more of a look at him. But, you know, just from, you know, early things that I've seen, he seems like a guy that could come in and really compete for a starting gig at a corner spot right away.
Yeah, I actually was taking a look at J.C. Horn last night. I really liked what I saw in film. I'm pretty confident that he will sneak into that day one, probably, you know, as that third DB off the board, something along those lines. Because I think after that, there is a little bit of a gap. We'll probably see a run probably mid-day two again, picking up with some safeties and some other corners. But I really liked what I saw from J.C. Horn last night. He was all over the football, really, in terms of the run game. He's a very physical player. He defeats blocks probably better than any corner I've watched in this class so far. And on top of that, man, he makes plays on the ball. He causes turnovers. He had two drives in a row. I forget again which game it was. But he came up with the interception on one drive. The next drive, he tips a ball and makes a play for his teammate who ends up taking the interception. So just all over the ball. And he's a guy who's a versatile corner too. He's good in press man. You know, he's still developing in that aspect, just as most college corners are. I think that's probably their biggest, challenge going into the NFL. But he plays really good off man coverage, and he also plays off zone without any problems. He's taken snaps at safety, takes snaps in the slot. So he's a guy that does move around and is physical, and I think he has a lot of room to grow too. He's hasn't played corner even for that. He did in high school, but I think he was a quarterback in high school, you know, converted to corner eventually. But like you mentioned with Surtain, the NFL bloodlines, man, he's a dog out there, that's for sure. And really the same thing can be said for Surtain and Farley. Those are all kind of those alpha type DBs that you want to invest in. I think that's a class for those guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, one thing to add on Surtain. So, I mean, watching all the Alabama games this year, I don't think anybody ever threw at him. Like, he was just right. He was just shutting down top receivers left and right. And this is kind of a funny comment, but just shows how much coaches realize his talent. Before the Rose Bowl, they interviewed Brian Kelly, the head coach of Notre Dame. They're like, oh, what do you think about Surtain? Like, you guys going to throw at him? And, you know, a lot of coaches take the circuitous route of being like, oh, we're going to have a game plan. Like, we're going to try to develop a plan where we're going to attack at him maybe. And he just said flat out, no, we're not going to even bother throwing at him. Like, he's just way too good. And that just really – that's shocked, because like, man, like he's that, like he's so good that other coaches are like, yeah, we're just not even bother with him. So, I mean, I know that corner is a very important position, but I also want teams to be wary of potentially drafting a corner. And like, I've seen Surtain go as high as 6 in some mock drafts of the Eagles. And I love corners, but I don't know if drafting a corner that high, it comes with a lot of risk. Because, like, you look at the Jets a couple of years ago with D. Milliner out of Alabama, went 5th overall and absolutely busted. So, corner's a high-risk, high-reward position. Definitely need them. And someone like Surtain, I think, is worth a top 10 pick. But I wouldn't trade away the farm or move up or, like, really risk your franchise for him, because it's a very risky position. But I think Surtain's far and away the best corner in the draft. Farley's a good second, but I think Surtain's – head and shoulders the number one.
Yeah, Surtain. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to mention, I think it's interesting how they're all pretty big corners too. Yeah. I think that tells you where NFL's kind of what the NFL wants in their corners, quite frankly, because that's what they're facing in receivers week in and week out. These big guys, they're all over 6'1". So what did you have to mention?
Yeah, no, just, you know, with going off the Surtain stuff, you know, I think with him, you mentioned Philly. I honestly think that'd be a really great fit for him, just because he'd have a guy like Darius Slay opposite of him. And, you know, I think he really has the skill set to be, he's going to come in day one and be a starting quarterback in this league. It's going to be very viable. You know, I think the one thing he just needs to prove is, can he compete with his long speed? But he checks just about every other box. And, you know, one game that I really wanted to highlight of his was from his junior season, when he was playing against the vaunted LSU offense with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Terrace Marshall, Justin Jefferson. And I think it was like you talked about Brian Kelly talking about not throwing at him. You can just see the type of respect that he gets, because he was playing right corner in that game. they really very rarely tried him. I think there was one double move that Ja'Marr Chase got him on. I mean, let's face it, that's the top receiver in this draft that we're talking about. So, of course, he's going to get him. But they really were attacking Trayvon Diggs in that game. And it was evident because, you know, what any outbreaking routes, anything towards the sideline, you know, was going towards Diggs' way, not Surtain. So I think that that's respect that he commanded in his presence. You know, it's always hard to tell with CBs sometimes because their stats may lie. But, you know, because a guy might not be getting tested, but that just goes to show that he's a pure lockdown guy. You know, so, you know, even just going off of that, you know, this is a real unique draft for the fact that we've got, you know, those corners that are up there at the top. You know, we've got some receivers that are seemingly going to be some top 15 picks. Then we've also got no real true edge guy that stands out. You know, if there was a name that has intrigued you guys so far, who would that be? I'll start with you first, Crane.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's really no clear number one edge, and there's a lot of guys out there. I mean, I think if the top edge right now is Kwity Paye out of Michigan, but one guy I think you should look at, he's not a pure edge, but he did play a lot of edge at Tulsa, is Zaven Collins, the Bronco Nagurski Award winner, which is the top defensive player in the entire country. He can do everything. He's a great tackler. He has a great vision. He's a thicker version of Micah Parsons, who's probably the top linebacker in this draft, but he has more upside off the edge. As a pure defensive end perspective, I think Carlos Basham, the guy out of Purdue, is
– Wake Forest.
Wake Forest, thank you. Yeah, he's absolutely monster, and he's a pure pass rusher, very fine-tuned in his moves and capability. But like you said, there's no clear number one edge, so I don't know really how many edges are going to go in the first round. It's going to be interesting, but I think Kwity Paye is probably the top edge. But it's going to be – it's going to be a real debate when we get close to the draft is who's going to emerge as the top pass rusher, because that's an important position on defense. We talk extensively about how quarterbacks run this league. Well, somebody's got to get after him, and that's those edge guys. So I don't know. It's going to be very cool to see what happens, and there's probably going to be a guy that teams fall in love with and draft probably way too high, but you know, that's just how the draft goes sometimes. But yeah, to your point, there's no real clear edge, so anything's on the table from Kwity Paye to Carlos Basham or Zaven Collins or anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I think generally in this day one talent pool, we're going to see probably heavy offense. It looks to be with these quarterbacks. You'll see probably 4 to 5 with these wide receivers. You see 4 or 5, you mentioned, you know, 6 or 7, possibly O-line, tight end here, a running back or two there. So I do think this front seven day one talent pool is a little bit thin, maybe as compared to what you could probably find day two, in this class. But I like that you mentioned Quay. I think he's a very, very good run defender, very smart NFL ready player. I think it's a question of what is his athleticism, right, on as far as the combine numbers will intrigue these teams. I know they hold those numbers to high standards, but I think that does translate to what his upside could be as far as a pass rusher. They didn't really ask him to, you know, always just kind of put his hand in there and get after the passer. He was more of kind of that every down run defender type role in that Michigan defense. But I think when you look at the front seven class as a whole, Micah Parsons obviously is a guy, a linebacker, if you are looking for that elite talent pool, he's probably going to end up going in the top 15, top or so range to really stand out in that linebacker class. But another edge guy I did want to mention was Azeez Ojulari from Georgia. I think he's that pass rusher type that you are, twitched up, you know, bendy type, flexible pass rusher that you might look for to get after the passer on third downs. And he kind of the opposite of Paye might have to work into that mold as a run defender. We'll see what he can do to maybe add to his frame and maybe be a little more consistent in that aspect. So depending on what you want, I think you have a couple guys to choose from that will fit your mold. But if you are a team that's trying to, you know, build that Tampa Bay Buccaneers model, I don't know if you're going to find that elite talent here in the first round.
Yeah, that's the one thing I think that's making this so intriguing is because there's really no, I mean, there's a group of guys I think that will come in and compete and be, you know, solid players, solid pros, but no, we don't see a Chase Young, we don't see a Myles Garrett, we don't see a, you know, we don't see a, you know, one of those top notch, clear cut top five, top overall level pick guys. So, you know, I do like a guy like Pei. You know, I think he his ability to play that strong side defensive end and play in the run game, you know, as long as he can continue to improve as a pass rusher and, like you said, show his ability, you know, what his athleticism is too, you know, I think that'll definitely go a long way for him come April, you know. And I just think, you know, there's a couple names that I think are going to be interesting to see how they play out throughout the process. And, you know, specifically with the Miami guys, with Jalen Phillips and Greg Rosso, you know, just watching Rosso's film, you know, he's a guy that, you know, I'm not sure. I think he's going to have to change things a little bit once he comes into the league, because not only one, he, you know, he's younger, coming off of his 2019 season where he was, you know, he did have 15 sacks, but he, you know, was a sophomore that year. And, you know, there were, It kind of reminded me a little bit of like the Vic Beasley season when Atlanta went to the Super Bowl, where, you know, some of his sacks weren't necessarily because of him beating a guy straight up one-on-one. I think just, you know, he has a, you know, a high level, you know, he's got a pretty high motor and things of that nature, and, you know, works for his sacks and things like that. But I'm not necessarily sure he's a guy that I want lining up every single play, you know, just rushing off the edge because of his just ability to rush the passer. I think you got to move him around a little bit. I think he's got to bulk up a little bit. I mean, they even were playing him at deep tackle at times. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But yeah, Jalen Phillips seems to be more of the, you know, edge defensive end, can play probably either side of the, with the at defensive end, you know, and things like that. So, you know, I think there it'll be interesting to see who becomes a high riser and who starts to dip out a little bit, you know, as the process goes along. So before we go, you know, we had to get into the quarterbacks. Another quarterback class that I think will be one that we look back on in a few years and say, hey, this could be one that, you know, changes the course of the league for some time, you know. Obviously, having a guy like Trevor Lawrence come into the league, where, you know, we've known since he won the national championship at Clemson as a freshman that this day was coming. You know, he wasn't going to stay around too long there in South Carolina. But, you know, for him to be able to come out this year, you know, with other guys like Zach Wilson, you know, Justin Fields as well, Mac Jones, just Juice, I'll kick things to you first. You know, thoughts on this quarterback class and, you know, where your thoughts are with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about first-round quarterbacks, it always comes down to, I think, for me, situation. Where are these guys going to end up? And that really, I think, can change the course of guys' career. Obviously, there are numerous examples to go back to, really positive and negative, obviously, that would defend that. So I think some guys, like I did mention, Fields are in our last podcast, but him and Lance, they will benefit obviously from being in a really good situation. I think they both have a little bit of work to do as far as where they're at, but I think I can speak for both of them that I really like what they could do as far as their upside. I think they're already efficient. They have good mechanics that they're in control of their game. They're smart players. They make good decisions out there. But I think it's just a matter of just advancing. There may be progression, full timing, things like that. Their comfortability in the pocket. They can both, you know, stand in the pocket and make throws, where I think they can both develop their management skills as far as avoiding pressure a little more effectively and just managing the offense. I think at the NFL level, where you want to see these guys grow. And I think that comes down again to where they end up and the scheme they end up in. But those are two similar guys, I think, that have really good careers ahead of them. And as far as their talent, they will be, you know, probably most likely top 15 picks. So hopefully they are getting to one of these situations and not ending up in a place where hopefully, you know, Trevor Lawrence, I hope they can really figure out a clear plan for him and what they want to do early on. Obviously he's going to be asked to step in and be their guy as soon as he enters the building. That like we said a few times, that pick has been written for a while. So it's a matter of hopefully building up, you know, keeping his confidence high, building things around him. They have to add to that old line if they want to see success, you know, especially in this year one, because things can get ugly with these young quarterbacks, as we mentioned, right? They can get ugly real quick. And I think they're fragile commodities that you really, really have to consciously have plans with. And I think, you know, guys like Lance and Fields are two guys that fall into that category.
Yeah, for you, Craig.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, Trevor Lawrence obviously is the top quarterback in this draft. I mean, he's definitely – he's the best draft prospect since Andrew Luck, and he's up there in the John Elway realm. But I think the draft – so it's certain that he's going number one. The draft is really going to start at the number two pick with the Jets, and where do they pick? There's a lot of people thinking Justin Fields, maybe Zach Wilson, Penei Sewell. In my personal opinion, I think Zach Wilson is the second best quarterback in this draft. I know you're an Ohio State fan, Ray, so this might be hard to hear, but when I watch both their tapes and Zach Wilson, they both are at six. They're both 6'3", so they have ideal NFL size. But when you watch Wilson's tape, he absolutely dominated at BYU. And I know people are going to knock Wilson for his level of competition. You got to remember, BYU isn't Alabama. BYU isn't a top 25 roster. He had Zach Milne, a great receiver, but it's not like the players that his receivers were head and shoulders above their competition.
Right.
And some of the throws he made were confident in the tight windows. He really forced the issue. And he threw 33 touchdowns and 3 interceptions with a 73% completion rate. So my main point is his roster wasn't great compared to Justin Fields, who at Ohio State consistently has a top 3 roster every year. Ryan Day is a top 3 coach in college football behind probably Nick Saban. That's about it in all reality.
And Dabo.
And Dabo. Yes. Thank you. But his receivers were constantly wide open. And it seemed like too many times that Justin Fields was a first read quarterback, didn't really progressed through his reads because he didn't have to. The first guy was wide open. And also I questioned Fields' performance in some big games. Besides the semifinal game this year against Clemson, he's kind of, I don't want to say played awful, but not played nearly as well in like Big Ten championship games, the first playoff game against Clemson last year. So, I mean, Justin Fields is a franchise level quarterback, but I think Wilson's going to be the number two quarterback taken. But it's not like I'm not saying Justin Fields is a terrible prospect, but I think he's a guy who could benefit from a year on the bench, learning the NFL system, getting adjusted to the NFL speed. Because you got to remember, he played in a spread offense at Ohio State. He never played under center except for like one or two times a game. So that's going to be an adjustment for him. And playing with NFL level talent, where not only does he have NFL level talent, is the guys lining up against his receivers are NFL caliber too, not scrubs where, you know, Chris Olave is running wide open, just getting like just torching his man. So that's my main argument, is that Justin Fields' roster was almost too good and it just didn't really show his NFL capability as compared to Zach Wilson, where he had to make more NFL level throws in his time at BYU.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, me being an Ohio State fan, I have I've been a fan of Justin Fields, but you know, I've been able to remain objective about the situation because, you know, guys like Zach Wilson, I really like that style of quarterback. You know, a playmaker, guy that can make moves on the run or make throws on the run. You know, he also rushed for 7 touchdowns this year too, on top of those 33 passing touchdowns. So, you know, he's a guy that can do a little bit of everything. And yeah, like you said, you know, I think he did prove to be more of a threat from the pocket than Justin Fields. You know, to me, Zach Wilson reminds me of like a, you know, he's like what Johnny Manziel should have been. you know, where he's got that mobility. He's got a really like background or a playground style of play. But he, you know, he is pretty polished from the pocket. And, you know, he's got a lot of size too. I think he's about 6'3". You know, I think he's a guy that you're going to see coming into the league. That style of quarterback is just going to be the norm, really almost the prototype coming, moving forward. And, yeah, you know, I think, you know, just even talking about Zach Wilson, I mean, I think with him, it's just going to be continuing to improve, to show that he can improve and grow, because I think that's one thing that people will argue is like, hey, well, listen, you know, he did blow up this last I believe this was his junior season, but you know, his sophomore and freshman seasons, he had some ups and downs, more ups and downs as a junior or as a sophomore than he did as a freshman. But still though, you know, I think that the people will want to see, you know, him to continue to develop it. But also too, just talking about Justin Fields, you know, I think with him, he reminds me of a more athletic Dak Prescott, where, you know, I think from, you know, college, you know, he did a lot of that power running stuff and zone read and, like you said, single read, even single side reads. Just I think with him, you know, he does have to prove that he can win from the pocket. But I think he's got enough tools to work with to come in and compete eventually down the line. You know, and having said that, I think that he's in a nice spot because, you know, you do have teams in the top 10 like Carolina who, you know, has been looking to replace Teddy Bridgewater, like the Denver Broncos who are thinking about kicking the tires on Drew Lock, or teams like the San Francisco 49ers at 12 who, you know, seem to be ready to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think there is a chance for him to end up in a situation where, yeah, you know, he will be the quarterback of the future, but he doesn't necessarily have to be the guy right away. And I think, you know, there's a case that can be said the same for Trey Lance. You know, I think a guy that's even more raw of a prospect, you know, he's got probably even more physical gifts than Justin Fields does, you know, very similar athletes, but he's a bigger guy. Could argue a stronger arm than Justin Fields. But, you know, I think just the fact that he only played that one freshman season at North Dakota State, really only played one game this past season in 2020. He's a guy I think that needs some more polish. And, you know, hopefully he ends up in a situation like a New England where he can sit for a little bit with whoever they bring in. You know, but a guy that I've really been intrigued by, you know, and Crane really pounded the table for this guy, you know, during the season when we were talking about the Heisman discussion, and that's Mac Jones. I think the perfect comparison I heard for Mac Jones is, you know, he's similar to a Phillip Rivers, where physically it's not necessarily the prettiest thing, but he just gets it done. And I think, you know, his size is a little underrated. He's a 6'4", 6'5" kid, and, you know, can – I'm not saying he's a blazer, you know, a guy that's going to really be taken off when things break down, but he can subtly move in the pocket. There's things about his game that I really am intrigued about. So I think he's a guy that I'm excited to really get more experience with watching on tape, because, you know, I liked when he even first came in for Tua when Tua broke his hip in 2019. When he came in, I think this was the Auburn game. Now, he did make some mistakes. You know, he had a couple picks and things like that. But even some of those weren't necessarily on him. I thought – even from then that, hey, this guy has got a chance to do something. So, you know, I think he's going to be a high riser as the draft process continues on.
Yeah. And one thing to add about Mac Jones is everybody before leading up to the Senior Bowl was questioning him about, oh, well, you play with Devontae Smith who was the Heisman winner, and Jalen Waddle. And every time Mac Jones dropped back to pass, he had three or four amazing options.
Right.
So he went to the Senior Bowl, and a lot of people, I mean, he does have questionable arm strength. He can't really rip it. He's not going to really make those tough throws. He's not going to be able to really stand in there and, like, and heave one down the field with a guy in his face. But he went to the Senior Bowl, and he proved everybody wrong. He played with guys who weren't Devontae Smith caliber, and he lit it up in the practice weeks. So for all those questions that people have about Mac Jones's arm strength and his level of competition and the guys around him, I think you proved them wrong. And we've already been hearing reports that Mac Jones might be the number eight pick. He might be the fourth quarterback taken. So I guess, and you see this every year, there are quarterbacks who might be falling or quarterbacks that teams fall in love with in the pre-draft process and they get picked. And I think Mac Jones is probably going to be one of those guys. Personally, I have him as my sixth quarterback. I have him behind Lance and Kyle Trask, but it's going to be interesting to see. And probably by draft time comes around, Mac Jones will probably be my fifth quarterback. I still like Lance better. I think he has more NFL upside, where Mac Jones can come in right away and start. I don't know really how much more Mac Jones can grow. That's my only complaint about him. NFL ready quarterback, but has he already reached his zenith as a quarterback? So,
yeah. Yeah, I think Mac Jones is, I think he's a very solid prospect. But like you said, Krim, I think just that upside, a little part of it, probably puts him to early day two range for me personally. Not to say that these teams, it really makes much of a difference to, you know, take a look at him in the back end of the first round. But just to mention a few of those teams, I think that if they do want to make a move maybe on one of those other guys that we mentioned, a team like Washington, Chicago, you have Pittsburgh right there at 24, and New Orleans at 28, that probably have to trade up a little bit if they want to get one of those guys that we mentioned a little bit earlier. As you mentioned, teams like Denver, right? Detroit, it's going to be interesting to see if they stick with Goff or go in a different direction. And then you mentioned Carolina, right? That kind of, it seems like they want to move on from Bridgewater, San Francisco there at 12. So there's definitely some teams at play for these guys, and they probably will go earlier than later, like we usually see every year with quarterbacks in the first round. But it's going to be interesting to see what some of these teams that maybe do have to look to the future, like a Pittsburgh, like a New Orleans, to see if they maybe make a move on draft day, because those teams too, specifically, they have made those moves recently in the first round with the Steelers and the Saints.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, no, I think really it always comes down to, we talk about this all the time. We talk about situations, and with the quarterbacks, you know, I think above anything, they're more situation dependent than people realize. I mean, just look at Sam Darnold. The fact that he might be a guy, you know, he was a top three pick in 2018, and he might be a guy that ends up getting replaced. And yes, you know, he hasn't had the most elite play, but at the same time too, he's had one of the worst situations around him. Like, you know, I really appreciated what Dan Orlovsky tweeted this week. He said, you know, Darnold's had a bottom five O-line, two or three bad OCs, you know, two head coaches, you know, one of the worst receiving cores, one of the worst running games in the league. I mean, a bottom 10 defense too. I mean, I know some guys can play above that, and you can see, I mean, even just on as bad of a roster as the Bengals had this past year, you could see the talent that Joe Burrow had and was able to work through some of that. But at the same time too, most guys are just not going to be able to live up to their potential playing through situations like that. So I just hope that wherever all these guys go, that they're in good situations and scenarios where they're really giving the guys a fighting chance.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued to see who any quarterback that works with Sean Payton, I think, is going to be successful. So who's the quarterback that's going to take over Sean Payton's offense? And then you look at, you mentioned it, New England, they're sitting at 15. Don't let any of those, you know, top guys fall in New England at 15. Man, at least make them trade up to get one of those guys.
Yeah, and New England looks like they're getting the gang back together too. They just announced that Marcus Cannon, Patrick Chung, and Dante Hightower are coming back. So, hey, New England, we thought they were finished, but they said, hold up, wait a minute, man. So, you know, they're definitely going to be another competitor to watch in the AFC East and the AFC in general, especially if they find out the right situation for a quarterback. Before we get wrapped up, guys, is there anything else you guys wanted to add? Any other names that you wanted to, you know, have everybody, you know, on the lookout for?
Nope, we got a long time, boys. So there are going to be names that pop up. There's going to be some high risers and some real deep fallers. But this is personally my favorite time of the year. I mean, just it sucks. There's no live football to watch, but this is where championship teams are made, and this is the really exciting time, in my opinion. So I'm here for it, and I'm really excited to see how this all plays out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm enjoying getting into the film a little bit, obviously, as I prepare for my own season, even over here in Western New York. But getting back into the film, I pretty much, you know, got through the top of the class. Here we getting into maybe the later day one guys, the day two guys I love getting into, because, you know, you look back at some of these drafts and you can really find these impact level players in the day two at a number of positions. So I can't wait to keep getting into it. Can't wait to keep putting out some more content, for sure, getting through this process.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Antoine Winfield, you know, just some names that were mid-round guys who clearly have shown their worth in the league thus far. So, you know, it's going to be fun getting into this, all of this, you know, like you said, this really is the best time of the year, you know, really getting to roster build and everything like that. So really excited to see how this process goes, and, you know, we'll be here to help tag you guys along with it. So for the boys, it's been fun. Thanks again, my guys, and I really appreciate it. So we'll be tuning in real soon, everybody. You guys take care out there.